السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. This is just a car guzari of a trip that Allah Tabarak Tala had allowed us to make in the year that had gone past, not this year of Ramadan, but the previous year. After the month of Ramadan, we spent a week in the land what is known as Istanbul. There were many reasons why we wanted to go and see. There were many things we went looking for. But the history that it gave us and the lessons that it gave us was unique. And because now of the present happenings in the land of Istanbul and Turkey, then it has given many Muslims around the world like a wake up. Many perhaps never knew that there is something called Turkey and the level that it had in the Islamic history. So we are not going to discuss the political problems at the moment. That at the end perhaps we will make some indication towards. I want to take you into a journey into history, where you will understand what this land Istanbul was, why it was so important in the history of Islam, what it became, and like how Rasulullah indicated that Islam will be like this. There will be times when it will go on its uruj, like how the sun rises high, and there will be times that it will sit very, very deep also. And in the land of Istanbul, it saw two unique. It was at one time the center of the Muslim world, the Khilafat. And the power at that time you will understand as we go through it. And then there was a time that it reached the grave. That those people who took it never thought that Islam will ever rise again. But they never looked at the sun. That sun which is mighty, it also sets. But because the sun itself got no power, but behind the sun is the command of Almighty Allah who says rise, and the sun rises. So at one time, whoever knew Turkey after the era of Mustafa Kemal, if he looked at that land of Turkey, he would have said, Islam will never come alive here again. And today if you go, then you will see the Qudrat of Allah, that Islam will come alive in the whole world only. When we went to Turkey, we already knew the history of Turkey, which a lot of you will not know, so we will go through it. But just putting you in the middle, the thought that I went to. When I went to Turkey, because we understood at one time what a position it had. And now Turkey was now Europe. Istanbul was Europe. So on the plane with us was European. It was a land which is unique in its beauty, the islands. We were not going to go to those islands, we were going to go to the city. But we had a lot of rum in our heart, because in the aeroplane also there is nothing but alcohol. On the menu it is alcohol, and they're serving you alcohol. If you're not sitting next to someone, you know that man is definitely going to be drinking. And everyone you see around you, but there was a certain feeling you could have in the aeroplane which was giving alcohol. And in the airport that there was a feeling that Islam is knocking at the doors of Istanbul and saying, I have come back again. And as I walked through the land in that 1 week, now at the present moment what's happening, it's like the sun has risen very high already. This was 1 year ago where you still couldn't see it, but you could just feel something is happening, that Islam is in the air. So at that time as I looked at it, one thought went into my mind. It's a verse of Quran where Allah Tabarakala speaks of the Nabi of the time, Nabi Uzair alayhi salam. He walked past Masjidul Aqsa after the great tyrant king of that time, and today they know him as Nabachit Nazar. In the Arabic language we know him as Bukht Nasr. In the history of mankind they say there were four kings who ruled wherever their eye fell on. One was Nabi Sulaiman alayhi salam. Whatever his eye fell on he took. There was never an army that could oppose him. One was Zulqarnain. These were two Muslim kings. And they lived on Islam to show wealth doesn't affect a man's piety. As long as he doesn't die for his wealth, he dies for Allah. Zulqarnain, when the time of his death came, he gave a unique wasiyat. He said that out against everyone's normal that the hands is in the janazah, is in the coffin. When you take my janazah, you put my hands outside my coffin. So people ask that, what will the benefit of that be? You have to be in. So this was his wasiyat. He said, so the world will know that the man who owned the whole world, Zulqarnain is mentioned in Quran also, when he died, he also went empty-handed. What a message he left for the world. The well don't go with you. So there were two believers. The ulama of tafsir said, wherever their eye fell on, they took over. Sulaiman alayhi salam, Bukht and Asr. And then there were two disbelievers. Among the disbelievers, wherever their eye fell on and they took over, one was Namrud. We heard of Namrud in the time of Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam. And Ibrahim alayhi salam's beginning and end was in the empire of Namrud. And finally in his time, Allah tabarakallah destroyed the tyrant king. He was the beginning of evil, Namrud. And then the end of that empire, when it was on the heights of his power, was this Bukht and Asr. It's like how we say America today is on the heights, but now it's falling. So that final Bukht and Asr was at the end. And in Islamic literature, there's a lot of Bukht and Asr. And the dreams that he had with regards to the people of this ummah. And regards to the happenings, what will happen one day in our time. But that's a long story. In his time also, he had the same dream, what today we call, whether they say the Zionist world, or the Freemason, or Illuminati, or what we say, the world of Shaitan, got a dream. That the religion of Allah must never survive on earth. So at that time, it was the Masjid of Sulaiman alayhi salam. Bukht and Asr was in the lands of Iraq, Babylon. And a mighty empire he created out of magic. Because when you go into this world of Satanism, then magic becomes your tool. So the Shayateen world, they indicated towards him that he must go towards the mighty Masjid of Sulaiman alayhi salam. And we all know that Masjid, what it was, built by the jinn. It was the biggest in the world. And Quran speaks about it. That when that enemy entered, in the 15th juz, Allah tabarakah describes in detail, that when they entered, then they tore that Masjid into pieces. What we see with the present Iraq and Syria, this was a blink of what Bukht and Asr did. When he entered the land of Aqsa at that time, the books of Tafsir write that when he left, there was not a single copy of the Torah to be found in the entire world. That is why years later, Allah Tawarukala would inspire a Nabi, Nabi Uzair alayhi salam, to rewrite it from memory. So another copy could be given to the world. He made sure, like how we say, when they come in, they look for the Quran. And they said, we will take the Quran out of the world. But the Quran, they can't. But at that time, the Torah never had that protection. Not a single copy of the Torah he left. The Masjid was raised. Sulaiman alayhi salam's Masjid was never going to stand after that. Not a single scholar was left in that land. Either he was executed or he was taken as a prisoner to the lands of Iraq. And the distance between Sham and Iraq in that era was just like you'll never come back. In that scene of blood and chaos and rape and whatever, when it was all done and flat. So Quran speaks that the Nabi of the time, Ustaz Mufassirin have said, a pious man of the time, he walked past, he had his donkey, he had some food, and as he walked past, then he looked at that sad sight. And that's the same sight we look at many times, the land of Iraq, and we look at Syria. And if you had known the history of Istanbul, you would have looked at it also. And that Nabi then he said, "Anna yuhyi hadhihi Allah ba'da mawtiha." That how will Allah ever give life to this land after it's been made dead? Can never happen. Because he was told that this will be the land of the Anbiya. But when he looked at it, and not a single believer, not a single book, not a single place of worship, flat. So Allah Tawarukala says, فَأَمَاتَهُ اللَّهُ مِئَةَ عَامٍ. There and there Almighty Allah said to that Nabi pass away. And there he passed away. There and there. ثُمَّ بَعَثَ. After 100 years he was told, come alive. Wake up. 70 years the Mufassirin write after he was told, die. Meaning after the land was flat. 70 years after that, Almighty Allah started a revolution of religion. And the people from the land of Iraq started coming back to Sham. Because religion got a magnet. You want to see the magnet, look at the Kaaba today. And no matter how expensive it is, when Allah's magnet pulls, the whole world will go towards it. Sham's magnet started Syria. And the scholars from around started moving to the land. They came and they re-erected the Masjid. Money was available. A new building was put up. A new environment was created. In the last, now you say like, see, the masjid is here, the musallis are here, everything is happening. Now the thing was bristling with iman. And then after 30 more years, 100 years on the dot, Almighty Allah said to the Nabi, stand. When he stood, and he looked around and he said, where am I? Because he, as though he went to sleep last night, and he saw no masjid, and he saw not a single believer, and he saw no one reading the Torah. And he woke up the next morning, and he said, everyone reading the Torah, and everyone going to the masjid. And he said, wow. And Allah Tabarakallah left that message in Quran for the people of this ummah, that if ever you see scenes in history which make you cry, then your own heart will ask you, how will Allah ever give life again? And Almighty Allah in Quran said, give it 100 years and I will show you my revolution. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, inna Allah yab'athu li hadhihi al-umma ala ra'si kulli mi'ati sana. That this ummah must never lose heart, because at the end of every 100 years, Almighty Allah will make alive a unique nation. May yujaddidu laha deenaha. That if the deen was almost dead or dead, that man will bring it alive again. This ummah will never see another Nabi coming. But Almighty Allah blessed this ummah such that you will have people in this ummah. And when we say this, then we also say to the people listening, and we say to ourselves, because the promise was made that in every new spring of Islam, after every autumn and winter has to be spring, it comes in the narration that Islam is a garden, the gardener is Allah, and in every new era, the gardener will take out new flowers for this nation. So when you hear that and it's going to happen, then every parent must make this intention that, oh Allah, let my child be that next flower. And who knows that your son, my son, can be in this narration. That at the end of 100 years, Allah will make a man stand up with the flag of Islam. Today we are seeing a man called Erdogan. You hear his bayan. You say this is a man that when he was born, I don't think his mother ever dreamed that one man will be able to make such a revolution, shake the whole world, Muslim and non-Muslim. So to go quickly how much we can, we will go into the history of this land. It began as a land, if everyone went to school, he learnt of someone called Constantine. Constantine was the mightiest of the, what we call the Roman Empire. In the time of Rasulullah ﷺ, two empires ruled the world. One was the Persian, one was the Roman. But many years before that, this Constantine came. And he gave them that beginning of that power. And the Roman world separated. And the one went on to this side, what we call Constantinople. After this land was built by him, Constantine, he was the mightiest of the emperors. And he was deep into the worship of the shaitan. He was a Persian worshipper, fire worshipper. But two things that he did. He established the worshipping of shaitan on a very high level. And the second thing he did is he and his mother accepted Christianity. So the world of the Christian suddenly fell for the trick. Like how many people fell for the trick of Mustafa Kamal, which we will discuss. And they fell for the trick of Ayatollah Khomeini, which we might have time to mention. He was also a trick. He was a Persian worshipper deep in the worship of Satan. He was told by Shaitan, you must become Christian. When he became Christian, the whole Christian world accepted him as the savior. Because it was the first time that a king of the world had accepted Christianity. And when he became Christian, then in the beginning, for a few years, he had all the ulama, the scholars brought. He would discuss with them, he would act like whatever they want. And very soon, one scholar who he feared, that was removed. And his own scholars were brought in. And before he died, the religion of Nabi Isa alayhi salam was forgotten in the world. And the religion of Paul was the hypocrite in the era of Isa alayhi salam. But Constantine made his religion alive for the Christian world. Until today, the Christians only know the religion of Constantine. It is a Persian religion. They brought in Christmas, and they brought in their Easter, and they brought in their fire, and they brought in their trees. Whatever came in, he and his mother brought it in. So he was a Satanist, and he was a Christian.
And he had a mighty Constantinople established on his name. Now he built this place. As the thing was done, in his lifetime he never completed it, completed one after him. The purpose of the completion of this thing could be seen when they completed it. They have this mighty, what is called, you gather the whole country or the whole world, and everyone comes for the opening, and people are slaughtered, and it was a filthy time in their time, where people of deen would be brought and would be killed, and whatever would happen. But when the thing was done, then the man who was the next emperor, he said a statement, which until today when you go to Istanbul, they will have that in the books. That he looked up, he was high on the top, and he's looking at the entire building, and he said, Solomon. And then whatever in his language, but the translation became this. And what he said was, O Sulaiman. Because remember, Sulaiman alayhi salam put up the unique Masjid al-Aqsa. And the jinn had to do it for men. And they were never happy to do it. So when he put this up, he said, Solomon, you thought you built something big, we built something even bigger. Now what a statement for a Christian to make, because it was a Satanist saying it. To say to, because Sulaiman alayhi salam said one dua, when Masjid al-Aqsa was built. He said, Oh Allah, give me such a kingdom that will never be given to anyone after me. La yambaghi li ahadim min ba'di. The shayateen hated Sulaiman alayhi salam. So their whole life effort until today is to re-love the empire of Sulaiman alayhi salam. To be able to get that amount of power that we can say we did better. So when they put up that thing, and they said, we beat you. They never beat, but it has so much of pride in their statement. They put up such a unique structure, that this was the center of the entire Christian world. It was known as the most beautiful in the lands of the Romans. Whichever army became an army that was strong, their first eyes would fall on the land of Constantinople. But they write for 1,000 years, whichever army went to conquer this land failed. So now you understand what a powerful land this must have been. For 1,000 years, whichever army went to conquer, they failed. The reasons of their failing, they have written it. They explain that when he built that, he searched for this land. If now you have to go to Istanbul to understand this, and you need a guide to take you on. Couple of reasons why no army could ever get it. The first is that it's a land which is surrounded by sea, water on three sides. Oceans. The different oceans, you get Marmara and you get Bosphorus. There's a third ocean. One is the Black Sea. Then there's the Marmara. And then there was what is called the Golden Horn, the Bosphorus. So because you got water on three sides, so that also got walls, the land. So if any enemy ships would try to attack those walls from the water tide was too strong. So their ships would never manage to remain in those waters. So because of that tide, the enemy from that side would easily pound them and then their entire ship would sink. So there was no way. There was one inlet which is called the Golden Horn. But you have to go there to understand this now. The Golden Horn is because it's in. On both sides it's land and it's a small cut. Because of that cut, there the tide is very low. It's like you're moving in a lake. So if the enemy could get their ships into the Golden Horn, from there you could launch attacks on the wall. So to prevent that, they had a 300 meter chain, which would stretch from the one area to the other area. So when the ships would come, they would put up the chain, and the ships would be on the other side of the chain. And then they had the second chain of what was called the naval, the Roman naval. So they would fire against these ships. In their firing, they had one unique tool which was called Greek fire. Until today, they say that no one knows what is the actual ingredient of it. Because it seemed that Shaitan brought this for them. They even mention in their books that it was told by the man who brought it that as long as you use the power, so this is a real Shaitan, who would have brought it in that era? They don't know who brought it. But the person who gave it, Greek fire, he told them, as long as you got this power, no one will take over this land. So what this thing would do in that era, They would be able to fire fire. They had a siphon which would blow out. It would blow out fire which would move in water. And the water would not burn out the fire. So those boats that were on the other side of this chain, trying to break through, the naval is attacking them. They're having people to try to cut the chain. And suddenly fire starts moving through water. And that would hit at the under of the boat. Suddenly those people would realize that our boat is burning. But the boat can't burn, it's in water. And that burn would create a hole, and that entire boat would then fall. As the boat would be sinking, you would get hundreds of soldiers in that water. And now it's ocean water. And as they're trying to save their lives, from this side they are being pounded by arrows. You can understand how many thousands and thousands died in those waters. Just for this land. That was the first. So the only way to get this land was what was called through the land, the last side. That through land is you can attack it. To prevent this, they had put up three walls. One was the wall which was very far from the city. Now if you climb over that wall, and they would have soldiers at so many places firing arrows. To understand it, you have to see this picture. That we normally think of a gun. That really shoots. But an arrow, how can an arrow really harm? Because we thinking of one arrow flying in the air. But if you can picture 100 soldiers, at the same time I think ready, aim. And when they say fire, at the same time you see 100 arrows moving in the same direction. Then you understand that even that man with the shield, he's not shielding himself from one arrow. At one time, I'm saying 100, but it was like sometimes 1,000 arrows coming in one direction. That is why the whole army, you would see, they put up their shield there. And you would see like rain of arrows falling. And just after that rain, the army starts running again. And the next rain comes, and they put up the shield again. And in that rain, then definitely the arrow goes through a shield. And then this one falls down dead, he falls down dead. As the arrows would be raining, then they would have a catapult of fire. So the man would say, fire, and then you will see that whole ball of fire coming. So even if you put up your shield, now fire was falling on you. And then there would be so many dying in burning. And then they would have rocks flying. So that group who's trying to cross that wall, he has to face this entire, what you'll call, barrage of weapon. As he falls over the wall, he falls into a moat. This moat was huge, many meters, and many meters deep. When we were there, we made note of it. 9 meters in height. It was 20 meters wide and 7 meters deep. So now you fall 7 meters. Whether that moat had water or it never had water. In both times, now you are open target. Because you got no horse with you, you have to already jump over the wall. Now you suddenly left your whole army and you fell deep. And now again the rain of arrows will hit you. He said, if anyone made it past that moat, which hardly anyone made, but people gave their lives for it. Because this was a land to get. After coming out of that moat, now you will find the second wall. And then there would be a third wall. So the chance of ever getting even near was like zero. They said, so many armies came. But when that city would close its windows and put its armies on the top, then every army was defeated and went back. They said, the other thing that this land had was if anyone said, we'll put a siege on the land, that we will not go to attack the land, because to get in is hard. So from outside they would put a siege. This land had certain qualities in it that could last for 5 to 10 years without any help coming from the outside world. It was closed up. The first they had water. Water was coming from outside avenues. But even if that avenue had to be shut by the enemy, until today if you go, they will take you to show you what is called a cistern. It is a huge underground container like of what we have a jug. This cistern would gather rainwater. And how many hundreds and hundreds of liters it must be containing. And it would ice it. So you would have ice bricks created. Huge. And if ever there was no water in the city, All they needed to do was to put a little melting powder. And as the ice would start melting, then the water would last the city for years and years. They never needed water. They had their own farms in the city. There was one problem, the toilet. And if you have to go toilet for so many years, where the dirt is going to go? So they had that channels going into the ocean. That the dirt will go into the ocean. So there was no need for that also. And they knew within a 3 to 5 year period, whoever laid a siege on this land, then the rest of the Roman world would get the message. And within that 3 to 5 years, they would send their ships. So the ship's help would come after 3 to 5 years and the enemy would have to run. So in that manner, they pushed away every army that ever thought of coming. And it was history that once an army would come once, they would never think of coming again. Because you got such a defeat. At the end of Rasulullah's life, when he told Sahaba radiallahu anhum, I have seen the white palace, what we are of the White House. And it's something to think about, that who gave the name White House? It seems Shaitan got a thrill with this white story. Because at that time also the Persian Empire, the central headquarters of the Persian Empire was also called the White House. So Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, when he hit on one rock at the time of the Battle of the Trench, he said, I have seen the white palace of the lands of Persia, Allah has given it to you. Those that were there wondering, what is he talking about? That you're going to take over Persia. And then he said, I have seen the palaces of the Roman Empire, meaning in what was called Sham. Allah has given that to you also. Then the Munafiqeen could not accept. They started mocking. Meaning the Roman Empire is yours, the Persian Empire is yours. But then one day Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam sitting with Sahaba radiallahu anhum. He said to them, do you know of one city which is put on water? Because I told you, surrounded 3 sides from water. He said, you know about one city like that? They all knew this was the center of the Roman Empire, far from Sham. It was a land no one would ever dream about. So at that time when he spoke about Rome or Sham, and he spoke about Persia, but Constantinople, you won't even mention it. But what a Nabi he was, and so simple. As he was sitting by them, like no big bayan, he called him, he said, come, I'll tell you something. Comes in the narration, as Sahaba radiallahu anhu was sitting, Rasulullah said, you know about one city which is on water? The Sahabi said, we said, oh Allah's Nabi, we know about it. Now listen to this word. Because if ever you get a chance to go to Istanbul, this word will teach you what was the power of Sunnah. One word of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The first thing he said, لَتَفْتَحُنَّ الْقُسْطَنْتِنِيَّةِ, that I guarantee you one day you will conquer Constantinople. That if you know the Arabic language, you will understand that lam that comes, that noon that comes. That don't look at me in doubt, guarantee you're going to get it one day. For them it was like a shock, it was so simple, there was no unique bayan, there was no statement, you get that land. And then he said this phrase, which is going to teach you the power of Sunnah, and how much this Ummah honored the words of Sunnah. He said, وَلَنِعْمَ الْأَمِيرُ أَمِيرُهَا, that what a wonderful Amir that Amir will be. وَلَنِعْمَ الْجَيْشُ ذَلِكَ الْجَيْشُ, and what a wonderful army that army will be. Now perhaps when it was said, the value of that word was not going to be realized. It was going to be understood over the next 700 years. For which reason? Until that point, whichever army went to the land and failed, they never dreamed of ever going back to the land. Because none of them had a statement from the Nabi saying, congratulations to you. When that word came out, the ulama write that every leader after stabilizing his hukuma, his first dream was, if I can get the land of Constantinople, then I will be the one who Rasulullah spoke about and said Mubarak to. So the first was Hazrat Muawiyah radiallahu anhu. In his time everything became stable. And how it would be, that the first to get the army ready and to get the Amir ready, they would call the Muhaddis of the era. And he would come in front. And in front of all the generals, the Khalifa would say to him, narrate to us the hadith of Constantinople. And then he would say, Allah's Nabi said, Allah's Nabi said that you're going to get the land. once then, when